You're listening to Decolonize Social Work, a conversation about social work, oppression, and liberation. I'm your co-host, Drew.
And I'm your co-host, Ondine.
Hi, everyone. Greetings from Decolonize Social Work. We are releasing this episode today to check in about the state of things, the order of the new world.
Mm.
I'm avoiding new world order because that's menacing, and hopefully...
And that's also wrestling, isn't it?
Well... There is that, too. Yeah.
Yeah, we hadn't planned. We have another episode, actually, that we are planning on releasing soon, which we will release and we're excited about. But because we're experiencing a global pandemic that's really kind of thrown a lot of people's plans out the window, we wanted to do a temperature check, share with you guys a little bit about how we're doing and how we're dealing with all the crazy feelings we're feeling and kind of call out to all of you that if you want to share how you're managing through this time, we'd love to hear it.
How have you been doing?
How have I been doing? I'm going through probably lots of different stages of grief.
I had that discussion with somebody the other day, a couple of people, they were describing something. I was like, that was my comment to them. I was like, this just sounds like different stages of grief.
Yeah. It's also multi-layered depending on what I'm grieving. I, you know, personally am doing okay because I haven't lost my job and I'm able to stay in my house and, you know, I have good access to technology. So I've been able to keep in touch okay with most people, and you know, we had a virtual karaoke birthday
that was really fun. We also tried out Netflix party the other night, watching some Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
I downloaded a new app called House Party. I haven't used it.
That's the rage,
but people are using it. So you know, I am okay immediately. I'm very worried about family members and friends who've lost their jobs, people who I know who are immunocompromised or in the older group that is in even more immediate danger because of this. I'm worried about people all over the world who I don't even know who are already living under some terrible conditions that, you know, are accelerated by climate change and capitalist disaster and imperialism, and you add in a pandemic that, it's just rough. So I feel a lot of different things throughout the day, every day. And what about you?
I'm probably close to the, if not on the same wave as you. Like you, I'm pretty fortunate that although I didn't work from home before this, it was easy to transfer or transition to work from home. And although some things weren't set up, you know, we kind of did it on the fly. So I'm really, really privileged, fortunate to not have my income stream disrupted. But like you, I'm also just looking, literally watching the world out my window and in my Black Mirror phone and just seeing, it's just so discordant because the day-to-day life that we have, it's nice out. You don't really see too much disruptive. I haven't like seen catastrophes yet, but like I know catastrophes are happening.
Yeah, just, like, you know, for anyone who doesn't already know, for context, we live in Kentucky. It's kind of a mostly rural state.
Yeah.
We're watching New York and Seattle on the news and we're just kind of scared.
Every time I see something about New York or...
New Orleans.
You mentioned other parts of the world, like news from different areas in India. Like every time I read something, it's just like I've read books about what happened in Hiroshima, like in Cambodia, when they're under Pol Pot and all these is horrific things. And I'm still having my difficulty. My imagination just cannot comprehend how bad this is in some places. And it just scoops something out of me that like just leaves a hole, and I hate the way it feels, and it's so terrifying. So I've been doing a little bit of trying to keep that healthy balance, right, of like staying informed and knowing what's going on, but also trying to do things to keep myself busy, whether that's building a garden bed or trying to figure out how to at least support stuff locally.
Yeah.
Do things within my control.
Yeah. Yeah, we wanted to talk a little bit about that because, you know, our audience is social workers and you all work in a variety of settings and probably some of you are working from home now too. Some of you may find yourself unemployed and then many of you are probably working in healthcare settings and you are very, very much on the front lines of what's happening right now. But even if you're not a social worker, it's super easy to feel overwhelmed with, like, what can I do? What can I do most immediately? you know, that urgency to step up for our neighbors and be a part of community should always be there. But we can also look at this weirdly as like an opportunity to start building the networks and the solidarity and the mutual goodwill that we are going to need to weather the next storm and the next disaster and pandemic and whatever else. So with that, I'd like to talk a little bit about something called mutual aid. You're laughing at me.
A little bit. And we, in full disclosure, have been involved with a network of a mutual aid group to support the town we live in. And I'm actually going to pass it over to you to talk a little bit about what mutual aid is and the various permutations.
Sure. I'll do my best. So, you know, we are all learning in public. Remember that. And I have heard the term mutual aid tossed around for a long time, but, you know, didn't know what that meant. And it turns out that I've probably been involved in mutual aid work for quite some time in different shapes and forms, but we didn't really call it that. But mutual aid is a system, essentially, of neighbors and community members networking with each other to make sure folks have what they need in order to survive. And it is very much not charity. Charity operates from sort of this top-down model where you have rich people or people in power who, to feel good, kind of hand out whatever to people below, and it often comes with strings attached. I know all of you guys who work out in the nonprofit industrial complex are quite familiar with things like eligibility requirements.
Right.
Mutual aid does not work that way. You know, mutual aid is, you know, there are some different pillars that kind of are the foundation of mutual aid, but one is that the world is kind of fucked up. And that it's fucked up because of these horrible structures that are lifted up and held up through white supremacy and colonization and capitalism. And that's why people suffer. But that also we know what we need as community members and we can help ourselves. We don't have to wait for those structures to save us. And quite frankly, they're not interested in saving us.
They're not. Those structures that dispense charity also, some would argue, and I think I agree with this, that that model creates a dependency of the recipients of that help too. Because it's never enough to actually get you out, right?
Yeah.
Like look at like unemployment benefits, right? You're never actually going to have enough to make ends meet on unemployment. But then like as soon as you get like a gig job or a part-time job, those benefits get decreased immediately. There's no cushion to actually help you do better. A lot of people would say that you get punished for, you know, bettering yourself. And that, you know, can be complicated, unpacked in different ways, but in some that's kind of what it looks like.
Yeah. You know, the bureaucratic nature of charity. I was just thinking as you were talking about how these systems are set up in such a way that you can never actually thrive. I was just thinking about how in the work we're trying to do right now in our community to make sure people have what they need to get through this moment. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you were corresponding with somebody who needs food and you had recommended that they talk to our local food bank.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, even in the middle of a fucking pandemic, there are rules that a person can only be referred to our local food bank by way of a nonprofit agency.
Mm-hmm.
That's not even suspended right now. So,
yeah.
You know, this is why mutual aid is really important, because we just, you know, you just can't assume that folks are going to be taken care of, again, by systems that, like, didn't catch everybody to begin with.
Yeah, and that example that you mentioned that I was involved in, not only did they have to be referred from somewhere, but I talked to them on Saturday and their appointment was Thursday.
Mm.
And they said they still don't have any food. And that's where like the mutual aid part could fill in that gap. But again, it's like you said, even in this global pandemic that is unlike anything.
At least you and I have experienced.
I can't imagine anybody who's still on this earth has seen anything like this that's globally affected like this.
There was one guy I saw floating around on social media who's Italian who apparently lived, he's like 101 and had lived through barely the influenza of 1918.
Wow.
I'm sorry to take
that's
you there.
No, that's okay.
You're right. This is unprecedented.
So, but even then, they couldn't waive this requirement that you have to be referred, or like there's this waiting period. And I get that you couldn't just help everybody. But I think that's like a very good example of what this has exposed all over, which is like all this bureaucracy is already operating at a very high stress point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also just kind of made up bullshit too. Like,
yeah.
What are we worried about? That somebody's going to take more food than they actually need? Like, who are we to decide what they need? And that gets back into those really gross things that we as social workers should be familiar about, with which is those Elizabethan poor laws
about like
who the worthy poor is, who's worth assisting or helping. And that's still, I think, if you didn't believe that that was still in our systems of social welfare today, I hope that this moment in our lives has opened you or focused your eyes a little bit to be able to see how truly built into those systems these very 400-year-old like abusive policies are of deciding who's worth saving and helping and who frankly isn't.
Yeah. I mean, what I'm interested in projects and networks that are about building solidarity with each other, not charity.
Which brings us to
back to mutual aid. So I want to talk a little bit about like we're trying to pour some of our time and energy and scared feelings into here to make our community better. But before that, let's chat a little bit about and share with folks what we learned from the Highlander Center the other day. And for anyone who's not familiar, the Highlander Center is an amazing, powerful resource. They're located in New Market, Tennessee, in Appalachia. And they're a place where leaders and networks and movement builders have been organizing for a very long time in Appalachia in the U.S. South. Just, you know, some badass grassroots activists have come through that space. And the Highlander Center put on a very timely webinar the other day called The History and Principles of Mutual Aid. It was great. It was really great. And there are several pieces that came out of that I think are worth sharing in this conversation.
What are some examples that you learned about of what mutual aid is that probably some people have heard of?
Yeah, that's great. And right before I say that, I just want to acknowledge, too, that mutual aid, we're kind of talking about like contemporary mutual aid at the moment. People taking care of each other is old as hell. And indigenous communities and black and brown communities and people who have been severely marginalized and oppressed, folks, these folks have had networks of taking care of one another for long time. So
right.
I just want to say that. But some examples of mutual aid networks. So some of you may have heard of a group called Food Not Bombs. Have you heard of Food Not Bombs?
I have. There's a
like a
collective or chapter of that here in our town.
Yeah, they are. It's a really loose kind of network of people. You can start it up yourself. You don't need to, you know, you can just do it. Who prepare food and give out food to folks in public. Our chapter does that, I think, on Tuesday nights downtown. So that's an example of mutual aid. Just like people say they're hungry, we can feed them. We don't
no
need to get some
asked.
Permit
yeah.
from the health department or like, you know, be a part of like some group that proselytizes to people in order to get the peanut butter sandwich or whatever.
Boiled hot dogs.
Another example of mutual aid work. There's an organization out of Chicago, and it's called Black Mama's Bailout Project, right?
Yep.
And will you say a little bit more about that? Because you're actually the person who introduced them to me.
Yeah, and I found out about them, as with all things, on Twitter. But basically, it is a organization or a group of folks in Chicago who use a mutual aid fund, basically people, anybody from not just Chicago, but anywhere, and can donate money to them. And what they do is pool that money to go and help out people who have been arrested and are awaiting trial, but don't have the money to pay their bail or their bond. And so they're just stuck in jail or prison waiting for their hearing date. And the only thing that's literally keeping there is a lack of money.
Yeah.
So this Black Mama's Bailout Fund uses that money to go and free these women, to let them go home, await their trial like everybody should be able to. And they usually have a big organized event around Mother's Day too,
okay.
But it's a year-round thing as well. But yeah, that's a great example of one.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that.
Mm-hmm.
So there are lots of examples of this, but you know, as you can probably tell, people are just like, hey, there's a gap here. We know what we need. We're going to make it happen. So that's mutual aid. And it's really a collaborative thing, and it exists outside of the state. Just as a I just have to name that our cat's super wild right now. She knows that we're recording a podcast, and so you're going to hear her probably yelling and climbing up on stuff. So sorry about that. There she goes.
Right on cue.
That's her cameo. Tell me, like, how did you feel about the Highlander Center webinar? Was there any, like, thing that came out of that that you learned or that you thought was worth indexing for later?
Yeah, I did. There were actually a lot of things that I took notes on. They went over the history of it, and as you mentioned too, this isn't by any means a new practice, and it certainly wasn't innovated by Western white cultures. It's existed in communities or indigenous communities, black and brown communities all over the world. This isn't new. It might be new to us.
Yeah, we didn't make
but,
a mutual aid.
You know, there were so many things, and they talked about like some of the Black Panthers' work in Oakland, like school lunches and stuff like that. Things that have become standardized in a way. Like, everybody knows that you get lunches at school.
My understanding is that the state essentially co-opted that program.
Started by the Black Panthers in Oakland. Yeah. So hearing about that, but they were really clear on kind of the principles around mutual aid. One of the things that one of the speakers talked about was, as you're building this infrastructure and trying to meet people where they are, you're going to work in solidarity with them. It's not charity, it's solidarity. And they said hopefully, but when you go to kind of help and participate in mutual aid, hopefully it's because you've been asked to come help. You don't just go parachute down and get hired or give yourself a job to dispense this mutual aid, because that's just basically duplicating that nonprofit industrial bullshit that we are trying to actively get away from in this mutual aid work.
Yeah, one of the like lead sort of facilitators on the call with Highlander cited the Zapatistas, and they talk a lot about like leading by asking.
Yeah. There was also a really good, I think, Zapatista quote or maxim that came from I know you've got it written down.
I've got it written down.
Yeah, what is it?
Everything for everyone, nothing for us.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
That is so cool. Yeah. So I think a lot of that frames up the approach of mutual aid. It helped for me to distinguish the difference between food not bombs to like your nonprofit food bank and what those differences are. Even though like the probably end goal, i.e. feeding somebody in that example, is the same, that process is very different.
And, you know, for folks who don't like gray areas, I'm not trying to totally shit all over our local food bank.
No, they're necessary.
I think they do a lot of good work, and I've known people who've worked there, and a lot of people get food. But, you know, we can do so much better.
We could, and I think that is also one of the things I've learned about mutual aid, is that this is not something to try to make charities of the state do better. This is something to exist outside of the state and without the state.
Yeah, mutual aid really is in opposition to capitalism because it's about cooperation, which is not, it rejects this idea of like pulling up yourself by your bootstraps and going it alone, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we need each other, we're all we have. So, you know, we were feeling, I mean, I was feeling a lot of fear about just how swiftly things have been changing here in Lexington. And I was spending a lot of time on Facebook, which is never healthy. But one thing that came across my desk, my virtual desk, if you will, was someone shared with me a Google form that folks had created. These folks live in Central Ohio, and it was kind of like a rapid response form so that people who need things, like need money, need rent, need pet food, need childcare, could get connected then to people who can offer that kind of stuff. And I was like, I'm just going to do this. I'm just going to replicate this, maybe change some questions here and there, and just like not get stuck in the like cyclical sort of ruminations about like, what can I do? What should I do? Should I do this? No, maybe I won't. Maybe I'm going to wait and see. Like, I just did it.
Yeah. I think the outcome of it has been pretty powerful too.
Yeah. So we've got, we've got some folks now who are like kind of helping to connect people through it. And, you know, we've been able to like connect people who have money to give, like directly with people who need money. You know, we are not policing, like people don't have to prove to us that they need this stuff. They say they need it, they need it. Today I was able to like coordinate people dropping off dog food to each other, and it was kind of cool. So, you know, now one thing that I'm trying to like be as thoughtful about as I can and to continue sort of approach carefully is that mutual aid is not apolitical, right? Like, this is about responding to people's immediate needs, but also like so that we can kind of build each other up and hold each other up and move forward together to like address the systems that oppress us.
In fact, some people probably say it should be political.
It should. It can't not be. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. Right? It can't be apolitical. So I am kind of struggling through what that looks like for us as we like are just right now, again, kind of a motley crew of like really dedicated volunteers who we care a lot about our neighbors, right? Trying to make sure people have what they need. Like, how do you use this as an organizing tool? I think I'm going to be reading a bit about some Black Panther breakfast or lunch programs here in the near future.
Well, before you get to that, though, you also found a pretty cool explainer video on YouTube, right? Like, shit's super fucked or something like that. What's it called?
Yeah, thank you so much for reminding me. Yeah, so we will share some resources with you guys through our social media, but this one is really good, and it's a video called Shit's Totally Fucked.
Not super. Okay.
What Can We Do? A Mutual Aid Explainer. And it's kind of a 101 by a couple of folks, Dean Spade and Ciro Carrillo. I hope I say that right. I apologize if I don't. But, you know, they define in this video mutual aid projects that they are a form of political participation in which people take responsibility for caring for one another and for changing political conditions, not just through symbolic acts or putting pressure on representatives, but by actually building new social relationships that are more survivable. So, you know, I think that's what we're trying to do with our very nascent sort of like learning mutual aid network here on the ground.
And that can be really broad, right? Everything from being a community resource to each other about toilet paper, all the way to how to respond to violence without calling the police.
Yeah,
right? It's a huge spectrum that you can do, right?
Yeah, and I'm all about that.
I am too. Me too. It reminds me a little bit, we talked about this in an earlier episode about social work in Cuba and the way that model was really rooted more in community organizing and almost somewhat of a mutual aid, at least from what I understood from what we read at that time, of basically, you know, the community was supporting each other, but then the social worker's job was actually to almost be the liaison with the state to get stuff that the community needed in order to facilitate that support.
Yeah. And in this specific example, we're not even trying to create a liaison with the state.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We're trying to do it totally outside of the state.
Outside of the state. And it would be really cool if, like, you know, after we're able to like connect some folks who can immediately help each other with stuff that's like urgent, what if we took it to the next step then and started to teach each other how to respond to stuff in our communities without involving law enforcement? I mean, that's a great thought.
And I will unfailingly probably catch a lot of heat for this, but one thing that really appeals to me about mutual aid is, in a way, it deprofessionalizes social work. And I say this because I am not a big proponent of the professionalization of social work, because I think it puts us in competition for legitimacy with like lawyers and doctors and other sorts
licensed
of folks, licensed folks. And I don't think that's the path we should be going on. Sure, there should be accountability and I guess maybe even some regulation, but that gatekeeping of who gets to be social, who gets to do social work, who gets to call each other social work, I'm not a fan of that.
I am less interested in being accountable to some state board than to being accountable to my neighbors.
Me too.
Right?
Yeah.
And people in my immediate community.
And I think in a post-colonial social work, what we're doing is mutual aid networks. And we're not there yet, but that's kind of always the process of decolonizing social work. We said this really early, like in a decolonized world, social work doesn't exist because we're doing something like mutual aid communities, right?
We're all just doing like legit mutual aid.
So I do also like mutual aid for that prospect, because anybody can tag in, you know, get caught up and just start this work. Everybody's got something to offer and we all, you know, we'll take care of each other as each person needs it.
So if you've been struggling a bit with like, what can I do? Maybe what would it look like to start developing a mutual aid network wherever you live? And think long term, right? think about helping people connect with each other and build and form relationships so that we can survive, but not just through this moment, this crisis, but through the next one and the next one, so that we can build a better world together.
And even though this is a like immediate crisis, the COVID-19 stuff, there are people who live in indefinite crises too, like communities that are targeted by police violence, mm-hmm. you know, communities that are targeted by ICE. There are things like this that are just ongoing as well, that mutual aid networks, like the bail fund I talked about in Chicago for Black Mamas, like that's just one that's ongoing. Yeah. So again, it doesn't take a global pandemic for you to suddenly start thinking about it. I will admit that's what it took for me to get to thinking I could participate in one. Or
you've participated, but you didn't have this language.
I guess that's true. That's a fairer way to put it. Thanks.
You're welcome. Well, we're going to wrap up because, you know, we didn't intend to make this episode, but here we are. We wanted to check in with you guys and, you know, please take care of yourself, take deep breaths, take care of the ones you love. Something that came out of the Highlander webinar too that I just wanted to share. Janae Taylor shared it with us on the webinar, but that right now, you know, we keep hearing social distancing.
All right, yeah.
But really what we're doing right now to protect one another is physical distancing. But we can be socially close, right? Physical distancing while creating social solidarity. That's what we should be thinking about, what we should be doing. Just because we aren't physically together doesn't mean that we can't hang out with each other or be connected. So let's not sacrifice connection right now during this time, because it's more critical than ever.
That's a perfect way to sum this up.
All right. Take care, everybody.
All right. Stay safe.
Bye. You have been listening to Decolonize Social Work, a conversation about social work, oppression, and liberation. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at DecolonizeSW and on Instagram at Decolonize Social Work. And if you've been enjoying our podcast, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. We really appreciate the feedback we've been getting from you all so far.